love and I admire about the Irish people. I've studied a little bit of history since I've been here. I found out you've been underdogs for years, hundreds of years. People dominating and ruling you, and you can identify with this freedom struggle, you understand? But I just have mine on the other side of the water. Well, we all fight for the same cause and idea, but we have different reasons and different approaches.
A bit of tension, obviously. He's trying to keep us cool, but he looks scared. He looks scared to me. Honestly, he looked frightened.
I don't know what I'm dealing with tonight. I'm fighting someone who is mechanically orientated, and that is just an unknown area. It's not fair that I should be put into this situation.
Go on your way, Mary Robinson, motherfucker to you. I got Stoochie Red for a jab to Katie Taylor.
When I first started, I was walking through, I didn't care King Kong was in the ring because I felt invincible. I felt like a total big war. That's how you should be feeling.
Hello and welcome to the latest Four Thumps Irish Boxing Podcast. You're joined today by me, your host Kevin Byrne from the Irish Sun. And we've got the editor of Irish Boxing and a Neil Diamond fan, Johnny Stapleton. Welcome, Johnny.
It's nice one to be here, lads. Hard to replace Eric.
You give it your best, though.
And that's only temporary, just to point out.
Well, you're more than welcome. Thanks a million for joining us today, Johnny. How are you, Kieran? You well?
I'm grand. Happy to be here.
Excellent. Well, we'll launch straight into it. As you might have heard in our intro there, Muhammad Ali was talking all about Irish underdogs, and there's another Irish underdog in action on Saturday at the lightweight prize fighter. His name is John O'Carroll, and he will be our feature interview today. Interesting character, Johnny.
Yeah, coming from out of nowhere with the win against Declan Garrity, and seems like the most challenge hungry young Irish fighter out there. There's none of this padding the record. He went straight in, and I'd say there's no other fighter more delighted to be fighting in prize fighter in the fourth fight. I presume some would say, oh well, I want a couple of fights under my belt, and I don't want to know. I don't think he's afraid of losing at all.
Yeah, he returned from Australia. He emigrated after having some underage success as an Irish amateur boxer, but he emigrated to Australia and took on jobs like he was a plasterer. No, I think he was in scaffolding. He did some painting, did a bit of personal fitness, and he built himself like just a 2-0 record. So he wasn't very much known about him. And he addresses some of the issues in our interview about, Australian boxing being viewed as something of a backwater and being denigrated in Ireland here. Like he's proud of, the start to his career he made in Australia. And there's a number of good Irish pros out there kind of doing their bit. Like he boxed on Dennis Hogan undercards and stuff like. So Australia is a healthy breeding ground for Irish boxers right now.
Australia is great because it gets you in the rankings earlier. I think he was a little degenerating against Australia himself, saying he fought kind of nobodies, but I think he was sort of respectful of the game of a whole, as in TJ Dotney has done well. I think Jake Haney's nearly ranked now. He won a title that puts him towards the sort of oceanic title out that way, and that gets you a ranking. So Australia, it's a great breeding ground for getting Irish fighters high up the ranking. I think TJ Dotney got offered the Scott Quigg fight on the back of his ranking. He's only 9 fights in, and I know TJ Dotney took exception to some of the things Declan Garrity was saying about Australian boxing. And I suppose Carroll doing well against Garrity proves like that there is the Irish talent is still, it's still talented, even though maybe the opposition isn't as great as you'd get back here. But if you're fighting Laffey and Journeyman and so forth, it's fairly similar, isn't it?
Yeah. Prize fighter concept is one for the underdogs. It's proven a decent ground for success for some Irish fighters over the year. Kieran, are you a fan of the format or...?
I think it still retains some of its novelty. At the same time, I suppose there's been too many competitions that haven't really been competitive or haven't caught the eye. When it first started, and you obviously had in a series of successive prize fighters, but in around a year or two, you had a period where you had an Irish interest in the sense of the likes of Martin Rogan and then Willie Casey, and I think they were all quite competitive and they had moments, and the novelty factor was really fresh and new for that time. Since then, Matchroom, I suppose, maybe they've struggled or maybe they've picked the wrong fighters to participate, but it looks like it should be a good competitive one. It's a very tough lineup for Carroll anyway.
Well, I think it was an ambitious format that kind of kick-started Matchroom's renewal of interest in boxing, and it did kind of push them out to the casual fans in England. I don't know if they need the product as much now as they once did. It's something they relied on at the start, but now they're at Wembley Stadium earlier on this year, so they've broken through. But we do have a special kind of run back through memory lane of some of the Irish boxers who've entered prize fighter over the years. Johnny, any memorable ones for you?
Definitely the first, the shock of prize fighter itself, and the way it was set up, and Martin Rogan winning it, and it was just brawl after brawl after brawl. I think in the final he hit the back of someone's head and he was just laying in as well at some stage. It was just an explosion. And as you say, you know, definitely lovely for the casual fans. You know, there's a winner at the end. And it was all action, definitely the first one. Big Rogie's first win was great. And it done Rogie's career the world of good. And then sort of pushed Prizefighter on. And Irish fighters looked at Prizefighter as a chance to break into, up the rankings, get your name out there. And I think even Willie Casey still, when he goes to England, probably gets signs more autographs and pictures than he would over here on the back of Prizefighter.
The Irish cabbie Martin Rogan burst onto the scene and took the inaugural Prizefighter tournament here at York Hall Bethnal Green. Here we go with the 12th high-octane pacey night and the turn of the super bantamweight. The classy Liverpool Southport Mark Moran, former British title challenger, first out of the hat. And in with the hard-hitting fellow Southport, an Irish novice, Willie Casey. A bit of an unknown quantity, calls himself Big Bang and says he'll produce fireworks. Nice right hand. Not the technical affair that Mark Moran elected and wanted. He's been dragged in, drawn in to the heat of battle. And how Willie Casey is relishing this.
And Moran just looking a little bit pedestrian at the moment.
Good uppercut from Casey. Back comes Moran. How are they taking these shots? And down he goes finally. Mark Moran inside the first minute of the last round of the first quarter final, and he is absolutely exhausted. Willie Casey on the verge, left to the right, punches getting home. Moran in big trouble, it's over! Willie Casey, the unknown from Limerick, sets Prizefighter the super bantamweight alight.
Yeah, Willie Casey, someone who came from nowhere, 2010. Three successes in a row in Prizefighter. Within a year, he was fighting for the European title in Ireland. And then, you know, he fought for the interim world title against Guillermo Rigondeau, a night we'll never forget. But other Irish winners, Eamon O'Kane won the All-Ireland Middleweight Prizefighter at the King's Hall. And Mike Perez, I guess you can call him one of our guys, he won the International Heavyweights. But there's been many more who've gone across to York Hall that have been fancied to do the job and haven't come away with success for whatever reason.
Yeah, well, I think the it's interesting, I suppose, to pick Perez and Rogan, considering they're both heavyweights. It's the format suits heavyweights, because especially has the knockout incentive. It guarantees a certain amount of action, a certain amount of excitement, and I think that's what draws in casual fans as well. A lot of casual fans wouldn't be interested in watching 12 rounds of boxing unless it's toe-to-toe and a kind of slugfest throughout, and they're kind of looking for the showreel moments and that type of thing. And heavyweights naturally will probably provide that more often than lower weights. So sometimes it can be hit and miss when you go down the weights, I think.
Another heavyweight who entered Prizefighter 2010 was Kevin McBride. Do you remember that one, lads? I can bring you through what happened. He beat Franklin Ngobi in the first fight in one of the most lackluster boxing matches I've ever seen. It was only three rounds, first fight. You expect them to come out windmilling, and they barely laid a glove in each other. But McBride got through to the semi-finals, where he boxed Matt Skelton. First round was poor. Second round, McBride knocked down Skelton quite clearly, but it was not given as a knockdown. And then the third round was close again, and the decision was given as a unanimous for Skelton, who I think went on to lose to Michael Sprott in the final. But there was another Irish interest in that one as well, Declan Timlin. I remember it well. He was knocked out by Shane McPhilbin in the first round, and he didn't look like he belonged there at all. But that was some of the heavyweight interest. Martin Rogan went back, of course, for a second attempt at the crown, knocked Albert Sosnowski out of ropes in the first round.
There's that jab again. He's having some success with it, Sosnowski. Rogan spread around! Pulled out of the ring!
Well, the question is it counting? Is it calling that a punch? I don't think so.
Well, real drama in that second round. So much of it seemed to be going so well for Sosnowski, but then literally sent flying out of the ring in the last few seconds. Well, these fans are getting some great entertainment in this first quarter final, there's no question about that.
Go school by Audley then.
School by Audley,
made Audley look good.
difficult thing to achieve. But I suppose Audley's one of those two-time winners who has pedigree in the tournament. Maybe it harks back to his days as a good amateur, bad pro.
Very bad pro.
It is, though. That's the factor I think we were discussing amongst ourselves earlier. When you look at the likes of Eamon O'Kane was a favourite and he had home advantage, or what you consider home advantage for him. But at the same time, the fighters who tend to do well as amateurs and can kind of win about over three rounds comprehensively do seem to go into the tournaments as favourites. So like someone like Harrison, who their main advantage as an amateur fighter was basically boxing off their jab and picking up points, kind of, it does suit as long as they stay out of trouble.
And it's one of those things, like John O'Carroll's going into this tournament a bit of an unknown quantity still. I know we saw him against Declan Garrity, although it wasn't televised, and we don't really know what to expect, but there have been Irish guys who've gone across the prize fighter. We've been very familiar with their careers, and they've just not delivered on the big day. Dean Byrne hasn't been seen since he lost to Mark Douglas in the quarterfinals last April, I think, in a welterweight event. Neil Sinclair in 2010, beaten by Bradley Price in the quarterfinal, lost a split decision. Paddy Gallagher got to the final last April, you know, defeated Commonwealth champion as an amateur, but didn't work out for him either.
It seems to be this sort of new tactic out as, oh, let's try and get a knockout in the first fight or the first round, and you get a rest and then you'll be brand new for the rest. The more prize fighters are, the more tactics that have been developed. When it was fresh, people were just going in, they didn't know what to expect. But some teams seem to think, get an early knockout, you know, stop them in your first fight and then you get a rest and then you're brand new for the final, you know. Or then if that doesn't work, try and avoid the war so you're fresh. So I think that adds to a bit of the damn squid thing. Paddy Gallagher's was a strange one because he lost to Oxygen, pronounce it, in the first.
Oxygen, yeah.
Yeah, in the first one. And then reinstated, got a lovely knockout. And I think he was shot in the final. I think I was saying to you last week that his missus hates the sound of if anyone mentions prize fighter, they're dead. He just wants to get that back behind him. I think he was saying himself that people have been too honest to him about how he performed in it. Like he said, basically berating him on the street, saying you were dire. He's looking to get that behind him. Not great for us to be bringing it back up.
Yeah, a couple of Irish cruiserweights have entered over the years as well. Darren Corbett's been in twice. Maybe there might have been too much expected of him in 2011 when he lost in 2011 he lost in the semi-finals, knocked out by Ovil McKenzie. But in 2009 there would have still been a bit of fanfare. Did Darren Corbett still have a bit left in the tank? And last year Colin Carmichael, I think, had a nice bet on him and it didn't come true either. He lost to it was Harry Miles in the quarterfinal as well. So
yeah, it's a strange one. I think Carroll, probably on the back of the Garrity performance, might go in as a bit of a dark horse, considering that was a matchroom card. There would be plenty of awareness about that, and probably more so in England than if it had been an undercard fight in Ireland that wasn't on a televised bill, even though that fight itself wasn't televised. Like, there's been a real mix. Like Casey, when he was entered, he was a substitute, I think, originally, so he was just... Yeah, so he came in and was completely under the radar and managed to succeed. So it's not a very easy tournament to bet on at all. Often the favourites just don't deliver whatsoever, and I don't think that's something that only applies to Irish fighters. I think it's across the board.
Yeah, so Jono's got a tough draw. He's fighting against Stephen Foster Jr. in the quarterfinals. Like, let's hope he pushes on and, you know, gives fans more to see of himself. I spoke to Pascal Collins, John O'Carroll's trainer, this morning, and he was happy with that. Even though Foster Jr. is one of the favourites, very experienced boxer, maybe he feels at 34, Foster's boxed over 10, 12 rounds quite frequently in his career, especially of late. Although I think his last couple of fights were 8-rounders or 6-rounders, but he's boxed at that championship distance a lot, and he thinks that, and Pascal's reckoning is that Jono's going to have too much of a quick pace for him.
The strange thing is, Jono was looking, he was upset that his rounds got cut against Deco, saying that he likes to grow into a fight. So in that regard, he's probably going to have to start explosive. But I think in terms of him, I just get from him that he's really challenged mad, and he relished that draw. He, you know, a chance to take a name. So even if he beats Foster and then gets spent and loses in the semi-final, he's a decent name on his record. I really think that he will really relish that rather than fighting one of the lesser known names.
Yeah, and he's shown admirable guts to put his O on the line so early. You know, you don't see too many boxers taking the risks that he took coming home from Australia to challenge, like, you know, Declan Garrity, something of a rising star, and he wasn't expected to win that fight either. Actually, I spoke to Declan this morning, trying to get his prediction for the fight, and he said he doesn't really Hang on, here's his answer here. I've a rematch with John O'Carroll coming up, so I hope he wins. Like, I guess their names are going to be inextricably linked because of their first fight, and it delivered a lot of excitement. And maybe he does have a loose arrangement that they have a rematch next year. So,
I think the natural reaction from a lot of people was that they'd prefer to see the rematch over a longer distance, maybe even over 8 or 10 rounds, maybe in a year or two, which probably would be better rather than spoiling what could potentially be a great fight by just kind of leaving it on another undercard. I can understand why it was slotted in where it was on the matchroom card, but considering it kind of really delivered a certain amount of excitement, I think it deserves to be bumped up a bill. I was really impressed with Carroll in the fight. Like, I have no problem admitting that I completely expected Garagy to dominate the fight and basically just use his boxing skills and win out fairly easily. And Carroll was just like a train from the opening bell. The first round felt like one of the longest rounds that I've ever watched in terms of just how relentless the pace was for the fight and the atmosphere. I mean, there was the absolute slump of what happened to Matthew Macklin and his knockout loss to Hoyland, and the crowd was completely down, and yet a fair crowd stayed on to watch the Garagy and Carroll fight, and the place was absolutely buzzing once again, which was amazing to see the contrast in emotion in the stadium and kind of contrast in excitement as well. But Carroll was absolutely brilliant, I thought. Like, really kind of made Garagy fight his fight, or nearly. I don't even know whether that kind of cliche of a phrase really works in this case, because he nearly forced Garagy to go away from his fight, in the sense that he wasn't even fighting his fight. He didn't know really what to do, it seemed, at times for kind of such a talented boxer that Garagy is. He just seemed overwhelmed, and Carroll just seemed to be constantly going forward. And if he can pace himself the right way in Prize Fighter, I think that tactic could go well. If he starts strong and can kind of bag the first two rounds and then maybe ease off, it could work out for him.
And he does look like he's got the punch. He's powerfully built, got tight strong shoulders, and he stands his ground. He plants his feet and just throws those big hooks. Well, not just all he does, I mean, but he's very good at that kind of power punching game.
I think he hurt Deco in that fight, I think, maybe once or twice. I think even Declan himself said, you know, I've proved I have a chin, so he's admitting he shipped two big shots. And I think in the first round he wobbled him, and in the third. So, and by all accounts, he's banging and sparring too. So
yeah, I guess we've got a note to sparring he's getting is with Stephen Ormond, who's going for a world title eliminator shot against Terry Flanagan on December the 13th. We sat down with Stephen Ormond recently for the Four Tomes podcast, and he was telling us, even just off the microphone, how strong Declan was, or Jono was, and how impressed he was by him.
You mentioned there as well over the fact that he's kind of taking a risk, and I suppose the fact that he's sparring with Stephen might stand to him that he's up to a higher standard than we realise, because I think it's really admirable that he's taken on a fight like this. I think it's admirable that he took the Garagy fight, because there are far too many fighters that are very wary of taking on a challenge in the risk of losing their O early on in their career, whereas he's really shown balls to do this, to take on a decorated amateur first of all, and then to enter this tournament as well. But at the same time, even though I admire him for it, I think he has to do it, because I mean, I wasn't overly aware of his, I was aware of his results, but I hadn't seen him fight when he was in Australia. There wasn't anything that would make him particularly stand out beyond a fair few Irish people that are over there, or Irish boxers over there. So he kind of nearly needs to grasp the opportunities that come his way. So it's really admirable that I think he's gone out of his way to do that.
Okay, so look, after talking him up, we'll hear from the man himself. The Four Tomes team sat down with John O'Carroll ahead of his prize fighter bout on Saturday night. So let's hear from the man himself. Hey, we're sitting here with Dublin Mead, Australia boxer John O'Carroll. gave Australian boxing a shot in the arm with his DQ victory over Declan Garagy. It was a great fight, possibly fight of the night at the return of the Mac.
Yeah,
and something
say.
On the line as well, a big prize on the line for you. Prize fighter slot.
Prize fighter now, thank God. But I just want to say one thing actually about Australia as well. I trained hard over there and I was getting good enough spars. I kind of dimmed myself down a lot. So Declan, I was thinking, he's over in Australia, he didn't do much, because I didn't fight in a year from when I came back. But I was training the whole time and I was working hard, you know what I mean? It's about being smart in this game as well, you know what I mean? So I was kind of dimming myself down, dimming Australia down as well. But they have some good boxers over there, I have to say. I was inspiring some great amateurs, and I did get one or two good spars with pros too. So I was just kind of dimming it down now for that whole.
Because there is an absence of kind of maybe video footage that you're able to see from kind of, you know, from bouts in Australia that aren't quite at title level, like, yeah, you know, a lot of them aren't recorded. So I guess there is an assumption in Ireland. You do hear the people, you do hear people saying, "Oh, I could go over there and win an Australian title." That's, yeah, you don't feel that's true.
No, look, don't get me wrong. The standards probably of amateur boxing wouldn't be up there, but they're still good. They're still getting Commonwealth Games. They're still winning, yeah, like, medals. You know what I mean? But at the same time, they've some good pros. Like, Billy Hussain is a great trainer over there. Dave Hegarty is another brilliant trainer. I first started off with Ricardo. He was a good trainer, but I wasn't getting spares and what I thought I needed over there. But Dave Hegarty now, he was Irish actually originally himself and flew over there, but he was a great trainer. He was the one that had me sitting on my shots and slowing punches down more so to get a bit of power into them, you know what I mean? So
that was something that was very noticeable in your fight against Declan Garrity. He was trying to box, he probably tried a few different tactics. He tried to mix it up, tried to scrap, tried to box at distance and all, but you kind of held your head and kept the same tactic every time, you know, kind of,
yeah,
as Barry McGuigan kind of says, bite down on the canvas with your toes and just throw those, exactly, throw those bombs. Like.
Yeah, well, the thing is, this is professional boxing and you need to have a bit of power in professional boxing, because amateurs and professionals, like, even when I changed over, it was a good learning curve for me. I felt I learned an awful lot, now I have to say, from twisting into my shots, not having to throw a million miles like a minute, you know what I mean? It's more about slowing your punches down, twisting into shots, getting power, because you want to be knocking people out, you know what I mean? You want to be exciting for the crowd too, but not slowing shots down too much, but at the same time getting nice power into the shots, you know?
I believe Eric has a bit of advice going into the prize fire. You've watched a good few of them, Eric.
Yeah, John, well done on your victory anyway. Thanks, on the return of the Mac card. One thing I've noticed over the years when I was watching prize fighters, most boxers neglect the jab,
yeah,
and the jab is probably the most important punch in boxing. It sets up everything, and I think people, their emotions are running high, and as soon as the opening bell comes, they forget tactics and they forget the game plan, and they go, yeah, out and they get involved in this, you know, big scrap, and instead of just sticking to your boxing and winning the fights. But just going back to the Australian boxing thing, I suppose the assumption that we have in relation to Australian boxing is probably the route they have to qualify for the Olympic Games. It's much easier route than the Europeans or the South Americans or Americans and or the Asian. So Australia is turning up at Olympic Games every 4 years with a full team.
Yeah,
and we, you know, so we're looking at that and we think, like, you know, Australia's getting a full team. We're only getting 3 and 4 boxers. How is that? But one thing I've noticed is the Australian Amateur Association have really invested in their boxing. They really are. They go on seasonal tours now, yeah, around Europe, and I've met them in Germany and France, and the Australian boxers, they go like on 3 and 4 month tours of different training camps. So they really are investing in their boxing over there. So there's no doubt that they are developing, and you can imagine if the best or the majority of them switch over to the pro ranks, then you're going to have great, I suppose, potential sparring partners and prospects out there.
Yeah, 100%. Like, I thought the spars I was getting with the amateurs was actually better than the spars I was getting with the professionals. Because I went to their amateur, say, high performance, and I got some great spars there, you know, I really did. And men that were like 30s and 25 and 29 and stuff, who's been just amateur the whole life, never actually turned over, but they were good fighters, good strong fighters, you know what I mean? And I agree exactly what you were saying there. There's a lot of money in their amateurs, but the whole country has a lot of money too, so it's not taken away from anything with the Irish rugby farmers. They put money into that as well, and we have a good squad.
What
there.
Are you doing back here? So if the country's doing so well,
the thing is, boxing over here is
homesick.
I was a bit homesick as well, and don't get me wrong, but the boxing, the spars, I suppose, was better here. Not taking anything away from Australia, that's all I'm kind of saying. I am definitely getting better spars. I'm sparring Stephen Armand, like, yeah, that's, it's amazing for me, you know what I mean? Like, and he's shown me the level that I can get to, and like that I need to be at, you know what I mean, more so, whereas I'm sparring the amateurs, which they were good amateurs, don't get me wrong, but they are, as I say, just amateurs at the end of the day. So I'm just happy that I'm back and I'm sparring Stephen Armand and I'm sparring the likes of, we're getting different people coming into this Celtic Warrior gym all the time, so we get a good variety and I don't have to travel for spars and things like that, you know what I mean? So it's great being home. I'm delighted that I'm home. And then saying that, like, all my friends got to see me fight on that return of the mic, like, and I'm at, like, building so much more fan base here than I would have, say, over in Australia, because they're looking at me winning over there saying, "How, well, that's easy," as you said earlier on, that's easy, like, the Australians aren't great. But I didn't even fight Australians when I was over there. The one thing I done, which was a bit silly on my own behalf, was I went and I sparred everywhere to kind of find a good gym for myself. And because I was punching out a lot of the lads over there and the fighters, they wouldn't put their hometown fighters in with me, so they kind of had to fly people in. That's why I only got 2 fights in 2 years. I was training now the whole time, don't get me wrong, but it was because you had to pay people to come in and fight me. And as you know, promoters don't really like to be paying.
Can you give us a bit of background over what brought you to Australia and what brought you home as well?
Yeah, well, I was actually training in 2012 Olympics. When I left school, my grandma took me in, and she was my nutritionist, coach, and everything else. My dad was just living down the road, and he was training me. So I had the best of both worlds. I didn't have to work. I was literally training, put me all into the boxing. And then I broke my wrist. So that had me out of the Olympics, I suppose, and even out of the qualifications and everything. So I was devastated with that. And because I was at the leaving school and focused totally on just the boxing, I didn't have no job, didn't have any qualifications. I ended up not going to college because when I had my college interview, I was actually going to Lithuania to box with the Irish team. So I missed that college interview. So I wasn't in college, I wasn't working, I wasn't doing anything, because I kind of put everything into the boxing. You know, I put my all legs in the one basket, I suppose. But that was one thing now that I've kind of learned from. You can't just say, oh, boxing's going to be me everything. Now I'm doing a bit of personal training and stuff like that, and I'm kind of, the work ethic that I kind of, when I went away to Australia, it showed me the way of working and stuff like that. And like, now I'm just so happy that I don't need to be working now, because I'm just training and focused again 100% on just the boxing. So when I broke my wrist that time, then I went to Australia and I had to work. I was doing scaffolding and everything while I was trying to box.
Painting and all.
I was doing an awful lot over there. But I was getting up at 6 o'clock in the morning, you're coming home at 3, and you're absolutely wrecked by the time you come 6 or 7 when you're going to the gym, you know? So that's why now I just feel blessed to be home, and I can focus 110% on the boxing.
What sort of a difference do you think entering Prize Fighter can make to your life?
Oh, a huge difference. Like, not alone the money, it's just, that's second nature to me right now. It's getting my name out there.
Money is second nature to you. Congratulations.
Right now it is, and anyway, I just want my name out there, you know what I mean? Because money will come if you're a good enough fighter, and you're going to be boxing the best. And I'll always fight. Anyone who Pascal says to me to fight, I'll fight. It's simple as that. I'm just a fighter. But I need people to know my name, because in other words, they're just going to be like throwing me in, and I'm getting bouts with people for little or no money, you know what I mean? And not getting fans, not getting anything. Whereas if I'm on this prize fight and I say win this, all the Irish fans will be behind me next time, you know? All the Irish fans know me. If a lot of them do now after that fight, which I said they would, but at the same time, you get fans from all walks of life when you win things like that, you know what I mean? That normally wouldn't be watching boxing, but say like girlfriends of people who would be just in the gym, who will watch it and be like, ah, he's a nice lad, fair play to him. Just because you're Irish, they kind of support the boxing too, you know what I mean? So this will definitely give me a big boost in life, I suppose, and a big boost in my boxing career. And like, people in America too might be able to see this, you know? So the coverage is worldwide.
What kind of developments have you made? Well, I suppose, what kind of benefits has the win over Carl or Declan Garrity been to you, John? Because like, there was a lot riding on it. Declan, he is, you know, a renowned kind of a great amateur career, European Union silver medalist, an up and coming prospect. So getting the win, even though, you know, it was a DQ win or whatever, but it was, and people, you know, ranting and raving about the fight and how good it was. What has that done for you and your confidence and your belief in yourself?
Well, like, the one thing about boxing, I believe you have to always believe in yourself. That's, confidence is the main thing going into that ring. If you look at before that fight even started, I went in with a smile on my face. You know what I mean? Because it's just another fight at the end of the day. As Pascal said to me, when there was a draw, people are going to know your name if you make a statement in this fight. So, like I said before, also, I had nothing to lose going into this fight. He had everything to lose, so I knew the pressure was going to be on him. Now, I was a bit gutted that wasn't on Sky Sports and stuff, and people didn't get to see it. But, and then we were sitting in that dressing room for an awful long time too. But I knew sitting there, he's going to be thinking constantly in his head, I have to do this, I have to do that. I just had to relax in that dressing room. I was chilled out. Like, you see the pictures before, I'm smiling, I'm having a laugh in the dressing room. I was soaking it all up, you know. I was absorbing every bit of that. Like, I loved that kind of, the bigger the crowd and everything, I thrive off that, you know what I mean? And I know Deco does as well, but that night, because, as you said, he had a great pedigree in amateurs and stuff like that, the pressure was on him. There was no pressure on me. And I knew this was going to be my chance. So if I made a statement, people would know me. And, like, I would get recognition from people like yourself, you know what I mean? Whereas I didn't have papers asking me interviews and this, that, and the other. He did. He was on papers. He was he was getting all the hype was about him. But I didn't have any of that, you know what I mean? And now that's what I wanted, and that's what I got, thank God.
Rematch down the line, Declan, Pascal Collins, your trainer, said, yeah, there's a rematch down the line, but in the future, when it's over 10 rounds and it's a big fight, you don't see yourself having an immediate rematch then?
No, what's the point in having a immediately rematch?
Selling tickets,
but I reckon if both of us, that's going to sell out, regardless when it's immediately or whether it's down the line. I reckon both of us going to go and make something of our careers. There's no doubt he's going to do well. There's no doubt I'm going to do well. Like, just because he had a good pedigree in the amateurs and stuff, I always boxed in a professional style. I kind of adapted to the amateurs. Like, so even though I won 2 All-Irelands, that didn't matter. It was junior level, so no one like noticed that, you know what I mean? And even Deco didn't notice that. But and the videos that they had of me, it was when I was only a kid. Like, I went away, I learned my trades as a professional. I've watched professional since I've been a kid. I always wanted to be a professional. Amateur never really done it for me. The main reason why I wanted to go to the Olympics was just to get a good sign-over deal for when I turn professional, you know?
So you're there now anyway.
Exactly.
It's going well. Where'd you get the nickname King Kong?
King Kong, because I'm hairy, mate. That's a good one, you know what I mean? Like, people are going to say what they want, this, that, and the other. Like, they can call themselves Pretty Boy. I don't want a little name like that. I want people to know. I don't want it to be pretty, you know what I mean? King Kong is who I am. It's hairy, you know? So, and the guy was King Kong Carol as well. It rhymes. Carol, you know what I mean? Actually, I have to give my uncle Sean a bit of credit for that as well, because he was the one that helped me. We were talking about nicknames for ages, and both of us kind of came up with the King Kong Carol and thought it was a good one.
So it's growing on you now,
it's
isn't it, John?
And it's kind of catchy as well. King Kong Carol. Yeah, it's growing on all of me indeed.
Well, King Kong, we wish you the best of luck in scaling the heights anyway. Thanks, so mate. Thanks very much for taking the time for speaking to Fart Humps.
Anytime. Thank you.
Okay, you've heard from John O'Carroll there, Ireland's latest prize fighter entrant among many in the last few years. I think he's got a good chance. I like this guy as an underdog. I think he could do the business. He's got a tough opening draw, but if he wins it, he's set up then for another tough fight, probably against Gary Buckland, probably the overall favourite. Johnny, do you think Carroll can deliver the goods in this one?
We expected Deco to beat him, or guaranteed to beat him the last time, and I think he's really going to relish the chance, and I hope even if he doesn't win that he puts in the type of performance that makes people sit up and take note. I think, is it Terry Crashbang Wallop, or it's along the lines, made the final once with just great performances, and it kind of, he got a British title shot out of it in the end as well. So hopefully, I expect him to go all out and to impress and to make a bit of a name for himself, and I'd be content enough with that even if he can't win it.
Yeah, it's a good point. I think Eddie Hearn was very impressed with him after the Garrity fight there in the Macklin undercard, and if he can actually make a performance that kind of has him stand out, not just to make him an opponent for matchroom fighters or anything like that, but that would lead to another future opportunity. It doesn't necessarily mean he has to win the tournament, even though I think he has a great chance. Tough enough draw. I think Gary Buckland, being a former prize fighter winner and also kind of the level that he's fought at, would probably be my favourite. I haven't seen the odds, so I don't know who the bookies are rating, but I think Carroll all the same has a good chance, and as I mentioned, with the tactics that he fought Garrity with, I think he could really kind of cause an upset if he gets past his first fight.
Yeah, hopefully it does open doors from, like, there's other boxers have been in prize fighter, not one even, like Sam Eggington has won, who now has a contract with Matchroom Sports but didn't win the prize fighter he entered. And if John O'Carroll's desires for domestic fights, there's quite a lot of guys around his level at lightweight and super featherweight. You've got a list like James Tennyson, Anthony Kukacha, Daniel McShane, Kieran McFarnock, even John John Evans at super featherweight. He may get to featherweight. At lightweight, obviously his sparring partner Stephen Orman, but there's other guys like Jamie Kavanagh, James Fryers, just the Garrity rematch, Paul Hyland up in Belfast as well. So there's so many fighters that he could come home and contest an Irish title for. It's an exciting part of the division.
Yeah, I think Fryers was saying he was going to go the British route at lightweight, and Hyland the Irish route. I'd really love to see a fight between Carroll and Hyland. Hyland seems fairly technically sound, and you know, he's been in with tough opponents from the off, really awkward opponents, and he's sort of developing experience that way. So I think there's a lot of good fights for them there. And it's about getting them made, but we know from him he'll take them. It's about, will the other boys take?
And Johnny, you saw James Fryers and Paul Hyland in action on the Mark Dunlop Back to the Future show in Belfast there a couple of weeks ago. Did you enjoy yourself up that show?
Yeah, it was a good stacked card, and sort of, you know, the undercard fighters got the the experience and wins they need, and it sold a good few tickets, and there's a burgeoning group of talent there. Like, Friars definitely looks like he's technically gifted, and he stepped up and got a knockout, which he promised and was looking for. Hoyland was in against a lunatic, you know, one of these former kickboxers that torn swinging from all over the place, and he, you know, he was roughed up, but he came through. But again, another awkward opponent for him. But I think Dee Walsh stood out in the card. He just really, I think I wrote in the piece that, you know, he came in with his collar flicked up. He hadn't got a hood, Cantona style, and he really had that sort of brash arrogance, yet you don't dislike him. Yeah. You know what I mean?
He might be a bit young for Cantona, Dee Walsh, would he be?
Yeah, I don't even know who he supports, but he came up collar flicked up style. It was something a bit different that just stood out. But I mean, in the first round he just toyed with Terry Motton, and in the second round he went and he destroyed him. Like, he caught him with some clean, lovely uppercuts.
What do you think he can achieve in the short term, I guess?
There was talk of a Hogan fight. Dennis Hogan is in Australia, who's world ranked, but I think if he fights for an Irish title, he loses his ranking, so that seems to be gone. It'd be nice to see him maybe make a defence or two. I don't know how they're going to jump to the British level. Like, does Mark Dunlop get on to Eddie Hearn or get on to Box Nation, or, you know, or fork out the money for a British title fight? So it'll be interesting to see how he develops over the next 12 months or so. But
how about defending his title, his Irish light middleweight title against Anthony Fitzgerald? Do you think that could be something?
That'll definitely be an interesting fight. And Anton makes any fight interesting. And yeah, that's definitely a fight I'd love to see. Maybe a stadium fight.
Defenses there, like Peter McDonagh is another Irish light middleweight who's in that title mix. Why is he not fighting for these titles?
He vacated, and he seemed to, I think he wanted to drop weight. Maybe there could be John Hutchinson's and the like, but light middleweight was fairly active, but I think they're really looking to progress him. So a name like Fitzgerald would definitely suit, whether that can be made or not, I'm not sure.
Okay, thank you, Johnny. I want to address now the bad blood card that took place in London's XL Arena last Saturday night. I think it's still running. The bouts are still just only coming to a close now. Finished up at 3 in the morning or 2 in the morning. It was crazy. Steve Collins Jr., Dublin Cruiserweight, boxed. I went into the ring almost at 2 a.m. Was it 1? Yeah, it was 2 a.m. Dangerous. Like, leaving a man sitting around from 6 o'clock. You'll be fighting soon, son. You'll be fighting soon, son. And then told, oh, midnight, you'll be fighting soon, son. And then after 2 a.m., it cannot be good conditions for a boxer to go into. But that's the thing. The main event was Tyson Fury in a, I guess you could call it a lackluster 10-point demolition, or demolition is a strong word, of Derek Chisora, but he picked him apart and won the WBO World Title Eliminator. Kieran, did you enjoy the fight?
I kind of did. I don't see why it was getting so much stick and reaction. Fury seems to be, I suppose, a very contentious figure, in the sense some people love him and a lot of people love either roiling him or stacking him off. Just to go back for a quick word about the Collins issue, I think it's absolutely ridiculous. He wouldn't have a football team waiting around if they're due to kick off at 3 and waiting around for until 9 o'clock that evening. So I don't know how it was let go for that long. But in terms of the Fury fight, I think it was very similar to the Kevin Johnson fight that he had against Kevin Kimpin Johnson in Belfast, that he didn't really have an opponent that was engaging with him much. He was very sensible, obviously, boxing on Peter Fury's terms from the corner to kind of not do anything stupid. And I suppose a lot of people complain about the fact that we don't get to see the kind of exciting Fury that takes risks and suffered knockdowns against the likes of Pajic and a few others, like Steve Cunningham as well. But I mean, if he's boxing and he's apparently lost millions in cancelled fights between the David Hayes fights and the Chisora fight that was cancelled before it finally went ahead, I don't see why he'd be boxing to risk a defeat.
Oh, lovely right hand, left hand, back left hand there from Tyson Fury, looking at the referee as well.
No, I think Tyson would like this one to be finished now, and I think I tend to agree.
Time. It's about that time, ref. Time to step in now. Save this man.
Doesn't look as though there's anything left now from Chisora. Closing stages of this 10th round. And like every round before it, Fury has dominated and is adding another 10 points to his tally. Chisora wants to fight off. Don Charles wants to pull him out. And I think he's going to do that.
I want you to finish him with feet. Yes, come out of there. Yeah?
Okay.
It's finished. Reluctantly, I think Derek Chisora has agreed, and the fight is over. And Tyson Fury, in a fight he has dominated from word go, wins this one.
Yeah, I gotta agree with you there, Ciarán. Like, and Tyson Fury only seems to me to box in that super aggressive manner when he's hurt himself, and if a guy's not hurting him, he'll just do his job and wear him down with those big arms, and that's pretty much what he did.
Yeah, Chisora was I won't say competitive at all. The word I was actually going to look for was that I suppose he showed some heart in the sense that he stayed in there for the 10 rounds. But it looked, I think from the first or second round, it looked like he didn't want to be in there. His body language is always kind of difficult to read. Sometimes he looks quite laid back and a bit sluggish. But like, I think he looked disinterested. It's a bit harsh maybe to say he was looking for a way out, but I don't think he took too much convincing from Don Charles when he wanted to pull him out.
Yeah, and even as there were questions in the corner throughout the rounds that you overheard, and they did not sound like a man who knew he was in a fight and had ambitions to win that fight. Johnny, the main support bout was Chris Eubank Jr.'s first step up to this sort of level, or the top sort of level, and he was defeated by Billy Joe Saunders, who now earns a shot at the winner of Andy Lee's world title, WBO world title, against Matt Korobov.
Eubank senses in this last minute that he could still take Saunders out of here. This is what he needs to do. He's going to have to stop him. Big telling off from referee Michael Alexander, rightly so, dragging him down onto the punches.
Oh, he's really going for it now, isn't he, Eubank?
Saunders making him miss though with most of those, and he's not really getting any space, any purchase to really land a power shot.
It's not going to be enough from Eubank. Running out of time.
Last few seconds, and for us, Billy Joe Saunders has won that fight, and I think Eubank knows it.
Were you impressed by Billy Joe Saunders?
Well, the first, it was a 5-6 rounds. It's hard to know whether just Eubank didn't turn up, and I still think we don't know what level Eubank Jr. is at. He looked amateurish, not even amateurish in terms of boxing, looked novice-ish in the first 5-6 rounds. I wasn't overly impressed with either, to be honest. I don't know whether I'm being harsh, but I really don't think Lee would, if he was to beat Korobov, would be worried about Billy Joe.
Yeah, I think the fatal flaw with Eubank's game plan was he was stepped up too soon, and he didn't know how to pace himself for a 12-round fight because he'd never had one. And that's something his team should have addressed. So for all the questions, for all the stick Chris Eubank Sr. has given, like in a deflection kind of manner, he's been criticised for having too much of an interest. He got it wrong, and he didn't step up his son early enough or with the right kind of developmental fights. And he was found out, because I think with a bit more experience, that's a fight Chris Eubank Jr. could have won. I don't know how you feel about that, Ciarán.
I don't think he could have won. I scored wide enough for Saunders at 117-112, I think. So I was shocked to hear of a split decision when the cards were being announced. I kind of disagree with Johnny in the sense that I think it proved that he can fight at a decent level. I don't agree that it's a fight that he could win boxing the same way that he did. I think he needs to be more proactive in the earlier rounds, and kind of, he's criticised and he's compared to his father as well over the fact that he's too laid back and he basically just showboats for the first few rounds. But I mean, you need to be doing something to win. There was rounds later on in the second half of the fight where you could say they were kind of 50-50 rounds, but he could nick them if he was just a bit more proactive. And he probably did nick them, obviously on one judge's card in particular, but he could have nicked earlier ones as well if he actually just had a few flurries or even just keep busy. But sometimes it does just seem he's more interested in posing, which I think, unless he kind of addresses that, I don't think it matters how fantastic he looks in terms of how much work he puts into the gym doing sit-ups. Like, I think he needs to basically show that he can be busy.
Yeah, but they're two fighters I definitely want to see again, and the plan I have in place is to see them again next year in Mill Street. Lee against Billy Joe Saunders, Lee's first defence of his new world title. On the undercard, Chris Eubank Jr. steps into the ring, simply the best, Gary Spike O'Sullivan in the other corner. Johnny, you here with me?
I was actually upset he didn't come into Simply the Best, me and my music again. But no, I think Eubank Jr. is decent for boxing. Like, he hasn't fought anyone, and yet he's, like, that fight overtook Fury Chisora by a mile. So like, he was good for the casual, good to get people involved, and a Eubank going to Cork can only be great.
Yeah, Spike was at the fight last week trying to call out Eubank. I don't know if they got close to each other, but I did hear from the Collins boys that the Eubank team, when Stevie Collins Jr. was going into the ring at 2 a.m. they were very, very, very nice, very kind and encouraging, and actually quite gentlemen, I believe is what they were described as, because they didn't come out, the Eubank crowd didn't come out of this with too much good press. And from what I gather, Frank Warren isn't too willing to work with them again. Chris Eubank Sr. threw a lot of spanners in the works getting that fight done. There was all this stuff about not turning up to the press conferences, but I think he dirtied his bib there a little bit slightly as well.
Well, I think with even though Spike O'Sullivan was previously affiliated one side with the Warren camp, now that he's fought in a matchroom card and impressed with his knockout of Anthony Fitzgerald, it's probably, it's ideal in the sense that if the Eubanks aren't working with Warren, that to make the Eubank O'Sullivan fight, as much as I'd love to see it in Mill Street, and it seems like an absolute natural situation for us, it mightn't be the way that kind of English fight fans are. Eddie Hearn or people that are making the decisions will look at it, but I think it's definitely, it would be a competitive fight. I think both of their most recent performances prove that, but I think Eubank would probably still have a bee in his bonnet about thinking that he's a level above O'Sullivan.
Well, there's only one man in Ireland who can put together such a card up there in Dunshaughlin, so come on, Brian Peters, out of hibernation for you. This, I know he's going to be watching the December 13th fight between Andy Lee and Matt Korobov, so we're all hoping for a Lee victory there to open some doors in Ireland. It's a huge night for Stephen Ormond as well, with his title eliminator against Terry Flanagan. So two victories there would be absolutely massive for the game of Irish boxing in 2015, especially due to Matthew Macklin's kind of sudden decline against Hyland there last week or 2 weeks ago.
If there's two wins there, well then 2015 easily has to be the best year for Irish boxing. If you've got Frampton with a world title, Jamie Conlon maybe a world title eliminator, if you have Lee with a world title, there's big fights there, and Ormond on the verge of one. I don't think we'd have been that blessed before.
It's good business for your website as well, Johnny.
Yeah, but it's strange, a lot of the smaller fighters actually draw a lot of hits at the minute, but yeah, it's flying, especially when you get them sort of crossover fights, or if the Sky involved and people from abroad are trying to look into Irish fighters. Yeah, everything seems to be going well and growing at the minute.
Yeah, because from talking to you, it's quite obvious that the fighters that gain international interest in Ireland would be, you know, when Macklin fights here and Lee has a big fight abroad, or Carl Frampton is the main man at the minute. Like, let's not mess around. And Katie Taylor is huge. And there are internationally known Olympians, you know, there's Nevin and Barnes and Conlon, so many great fighters out there at the minute. But you've been telling me that, like, some of the fighters that attract the biggest hits to your site are like Paul Quinn and Daniel McShane, and John O'Carroll is a big hit as well.
John O'Carroll was massive. I think it's just the way he came out and called out Geraghty. I think because maybe you can get your Katie Taylor news more mainstream, you can get your Macklin news, you know, mainstream as well. So if you, Paul Quinn and Daniel McShane just went through the roof, I think that was one of the biggest stories, one of the weeks. And I think it was a preview week to the Macklin card. Sometimes it just works out who has the most Facebook friends, maybe it's and if they share it, but a lot of the smaller stuff it does well because people can't get it anywhere else. But I think if there's a healthy interest in the smaller stuff, that only builds and leads up and it affects all of boxing. But yeah, Frampton is still reigns king. Frampton pays for the dinner, breakfast and the night over in Belfast. No one else does. Yeah. Frampton is king.
Well, yeah, people can't get it anywhere else, Johnny. That's what irishboxing.com is all about, and that's what we're trying to do here at Four Thumbs as well. So look, we really appreciate you coming over to sit with us here. And
no problem, man. Thanks for having me.
Kieran, thank you.
No bother.
We did a little Four Thumbs Twitter prediction competition. Most of the support for Prizefighter is coming in, unsurprisingly, for John O'Carroll. So I want to give a shout out to Rob Brennan and Anto Connolly. They're backing their boy.